Blog Talk Radio.
Reminds me of a little music box that my mother used to play next to my crib when I was just a little teeny baby. But that was a long time ago. And every now and then I think back and I say to myself,
I think we're two people are in love.
Hello, everybody. This is Corey Washington. Once again, with another episode of the Jimi Hendrix Black Legacy series. We're about to listen to an interview I did with King George Clemens. It was live through Skype. And let's just go ahead and check it out. We'll let the rest of the song finish and then we'll play the interview.
No substitute for the real thing.
All right, everybody. Once again, this is another edition of the Jimi Hendrix Black Legacy series. We have two special guests all the way from Sweden. We have King George Clemens and his little brother, Alex. How are you guys doing today?
I'm doing fine. I hope Alex is.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, definitely. Thanks a lot for being my special guest. Before we jump right into it, I just want to go ahead and run down a little bit on your history, and then you can fill in the blank on this. Let's see if I did my homework. Okay.
All right.
So you were born in Hampton, Virginia. That's actually where my aunt stays in Hampton, Virginia.
Are you?
Yes. You moved to New York City in the 60s in the Harlem area singing in clubs. 1965 yeah. was a good year for you. You was at the Apollo with Don Covey. Mm-hmm. You actually sang background vocals on his mm-hmm. famous top 40 hit. Was it Have Mercy yeah. or Mercy Mercy? Which one was it?
Have Mercy.
Have Mercy. Okay. Yeah. And then you left Don Covey and you had your own solo career as King George. You actually met Jimmy in Harlem, jammed with him, jammed with Jimmy Castor. A lot of funk people know Jimmy Castor. You were offered a contract to sing in an all-black mm-hmm. soul band in Europe called Harlem Kitties.
In Sweden.
In Sweden. You arrived about what?
Harlem
Kitties.
Me and Jimmy were friends. He was staying with me when he didn't have no job. He wasn't famous in that time. We were all trying to get famous, and he stayed with me. So I got to know a lot about him and his music. And I agreed that we thought the same way about the music and how it was going, and I lived long enough to see how it was going. So he was playing behind Wilson Pickett. Some books they wrote that he said he was playing behind me, but I think I didn't look at it that way. He's always been such a big man to me, even when he didn't think so. That's the way he thought. And maybe that's why I sort of fell in love with him. At that time, me and him made a bet that if he went to England and I came to Sweden, he would meet me here in 4 years. We actually did it. He came to the club I was playing in 4 years, and we had a jam, and it went on from there a little bit further, because he, from England, he used to come over to Sweden a lot, and that's where the pictures was taken. So he was one of the first person that I met in New York that I was impressed with. I was supposed to be a soul singer, and he didn't know what he was. He just was playing like Bob Dylan and stuff like that. I'm the one that told him he wasn't singing then when he was playing with Lonnie Youngblood. Okay. He wasn't singing, and he asked me to sing. I said no. He was messing around with Muddy Waters blues. This one about a voodoo child. Okay. If you slow it down and pass it for the note, it sounds like Muddy Waters did a long time ago. And when he asked me to sing it, I said I couldn't do it. I had too much respect. I was young. I had too much respect for Muddy Waters, so I couldn't sing it. I was afraid to sing it. I was really afraid, because everything sounded different when he played it. You know, but I did do a record with him, Have Mercy. He's a guitar player that played on Have Mercy. I didn't know he was a guitar player at the time, but I went and asked the people who he was, and they wouldn't tell me, because Jimmy had himself mixed up with LSD and other drugs, and they didn't want him in the band. They said he sees music when he was playing it. He said,
"What year was this?
You close your eyes and you can see the music floats around the place."
What year was
and,
this when he was on the LSD? Was it?
Yeah,
it wasn't 66, was
it? Yeah. Last part of, I spent 6 years there in New York. So yeah.
So you're saying Jimmy?
No,
Jimmy.
I made it big here in '66. I was coming over in 66. But what I'm telling you about was before the time that I came over, that we used to sit in my apartment and we discussed this. You know how it was with Curtis Knight and all the big time musicians in the like Don Corvey. Well, Wilson could sing, and the Isley brother was the only one that I knew that treated him right. The rest of them people were talking BS all the time about how he was acting and what he thought, and he played Bob Dylan music, and I didn't like that either. But I learned something from Bob Dylan at that time that I didn't know, that the music that he played, and he was crazy about Bob Dylan. We went to a soul party, and he took off the record, and he took off Wilson Pickett from the machine and played Bob Dylan. It was a mess.
Yeah.
They wanted to cut him.
He was still alive today, and he took Wilson Pickett, a soul artist, off the thing and put Bob Dylan on. They'll still get him today for that, I believe.
But when I left home, I promised I would never go that way again. My mother told me, don't you go no further, because the way you acted, they're going to kill you. Because I was listening to Ray Charles at the beginning, when he took the music and said, they said it was gospel, and he was singing, I Got a Woman. It was a big scandal in my town. Wilson Pickett, they didn't let me listen to that at all.
Okay.
I never heard Wilson Pickett before. I knew he was in a spirit group, but I never heard him before Midnight Hour when he put out that one. Then I heard what he was in there. And I went to the Apollo when I first got to New York. I went to the Apollo every week after I found out that Harlem was Harlem and Brooklyn was not New York. I stayed in Brooklyn for 6 months before I found out where Harlem was. And I saw Shotgun Man, what is his name? Motown
Walker,
Man.
Junior Walker.
I saw all them kind of acts in a small bars. I did like this. I said, I can do that too. And I did it, you know. And now I'm sitting here now for about 50 years, and it's not so much fun since Hendrix is gone, you know. The things that we talked about, I can't talk to nobody here about them. They not that they don't understand, but they don't understand.
Yeah.
They don't understand nothing.
Did you know the twins, the Alims, when you were in Harlem, the ghetto fighters, Taharka or Albert and Allen back then, the twins? Remember them with Jimmy? The ghetto fighters.
Oh, yeah. The,
you remember
the
twins? Them? Yeah, the twins.
Yeah. They played congas and things.
Well, yeah, they were background singers with Jimmy. They were also with Jimmy when he was staying in Harlem with Faye.
Yeah.
Did you ever meet them?
No.
Oh, you didn't?
Well, maybe one of them.
Okay.
Because I didn't know the difference. They were twins.
Right.
And I met one of them one time and another one another time. They might remember me.
Okay.
I don't know.
Only one is alive.
There was a drummer called, what is his name? The drummer?
Yeah. Jimmy Mays?
Jimmy Mays.
He used to play with Jimmy. I was living in the same building as Jimmy Mays in New York.
Okay.
And that's where, what's the other one? Curtis Knight.
Yeah.
We were all living in the same building. And that's why I got in touch with Jimmy so easily, because he was coming to the building looking for them. And they used to close them up. And I let him in my house. And he didn't have nowhere to stay, and the guitar was in the pawn shop. and he had Bob Dylan record, you know. So, but I thought it was interesting. You know, I used to tell them up in Harlem, you people call talking about LSD and everything, and I asked Jimmy why he played Bob Dylan up there, and he wouldn't play Wilson Pickett. And he said, these niggas got to learn how they're doing. He said it straight out. And all these things, they want to cut in for it. They're all drawing up knives. And I told him, cut this out, because he's right. Because he introduced me. I met Mick Jagger, the Animal, all these people. I met through Jimmy downtown New York in their village. When
so
it
let
was
me get
village.
This. Let me get this straight, the clarifier, King George. So you're saying that even before Jimi Hendrix became famous, before he went to Europe, in Harlem, he was trying to get the black people to listen to new types of music, like Bob Dylan, and trying to expand their minds.
Yeah.
Is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
And are you also saying...
And he expanded his mind.
Okay. Are you also saying that he was experimenting with LSD even before he went to Europe?
Yeah.
Was in the LSD before he became famous.
Yeah.
Because you know, in the books,
that was the problem.
Okay, in the books, they try to say that somebody like a European introduced him to LSD, and then he started playing all of this crazy music. That's what they're trying to push on people. But you're saying he was doing that before all of these people discovered him.
Yes, he was.
Okay,
and I know about it because the people that I was dressing for and doing the shows with, well, told me, don't mess with Jimmy because he's taking this LSD and we can't get along with him. Little Richard, all these people, that was really against Jimmy. And I said, I don't see nothing wrong with him. He talks good sense to me. Don't mess with him. He gets you in a lot of trouble. And I didn't have he used to take me to a Spanish Harlem. They don't understand that Spanish Harlem is Black Harlem. It's two different places. They don't understand that. And he showed me this Latin player. He was jealous of Jimmy before. Carlos Santana. Yeah, I met Carlos Santana years ago in Spanish Harlem. And he took me downtown. The question was this: if I take the LSD, then I could hang out with him. But I didn't take it because I was scared. So I that's why I remember everything.
Yeah.
Then he took me downtown. He showed me Eric Burdon and the Animals. He talked about Eric Clapton. He talked about an English girl that was after him to get him over to England. He talked about all that. And I said, well, I'm going to Sweden. He said, well, I'm going to England. I said, well, if you're going to England, I'll meet you in Sweden. He said, yeah, if you're going to be a big star, he's going to come to Sweden. And that's how we made it. I was so surprised when it lends up to what we were saying. But, you know, everybody in this country, they know about me. And they know that he's my man, that I met him first. So it went around about me taking LSD and brain damage. I have a stroke. It's a stroke, really. But when they talk, I told him before, when I go to Virginia, they think that the white man done poisoned me. I'm talking out of my head when I try to talk to him about what's going on. That's why I came back. Well, one girl here told me, you have to go to Virginia to see why you left. Well, I found out it goes about something called instinct. We all have it. All have instinct. We do something, we don't know why, but you say, I'm going to try this. And that's the person, the purple people don't, some people trust their instincts, killing people and things like that. But I mean, good instinct. They don't do it. The average person, they don't do it. That's why we sort of sit alone with many people that we admire, you know. They don't try, And then when I got back to Sweden, I asked the girl, because I was having nightmares, sleeping with girls and having nightmares about Virginia and Georgia, the whole South. So she said, you need to go back there and find out why you left. And I was so young. It had to be instinct, because when I got here, everybody told me I was a smart man because I missed the Vietnam. And I missed the things down south. My mama told me, don't go down. Yeah. Set me the other way. So I took her money and came the other way. And she died while I was on the way. Yeah. And no father. So the rest of the family just sort of melted away. My mother, yeah, she died. So then I thought I would meet Jimmy and some more musicians, go down south. I'm going to show them, you know. I'm going to show them what a good man can do. That took 6 years first, and then some more Don Corvey and different gigs, and then I end up to Sweden. Alex ain't saying nothing yet.
Yeah.
And we listening to the wisdom and knowledge from you. We enjoying hear you talk. But let me ask you something, King George. You mentioned Sweden, and you were over there before Jimi Hendrix. You had your all-black soul band, the Harlem Kitties, but then you had another band called the Discovery, King George Discovery, which was kind of what Jimi Hendrix was doing with the psychedelic soul, right? Tell us a little bit about that. Tell us something about that group.
Well, that comes up some more of racism. I built that band, and it was after Jimi Hendrix, like you say.
Right.
It was after that. It was big over here. And I quit the Harlem Kitties, and I took a all-white man, and then the racism started. But I made a record the same time as Cassius Clay was talking a lot. I made a record called I'm the Best, and it was about Cassius Clay. And the record sold, and then they got a contract, the group that I had got a contract, and they told the young musician, they didn't know no better, told him, we can sign you, but the black guy, we can't sign. That's what happened to it. And I told them that would happen. They didn't believe it. They got mixed up with the limelight, you know, the light.
We got about another minute live, so. Stay tuned. Just
Tom Jones,
you can listen to the whole interview later on if you click on the link.
He had a record that I got out now with Harlem Kitties called Live in Las Vegas. It wasn't in Las Vegas. It was in Denmark. And he got Live in Las Vegas from Las Vegas. If you want to see how I used to step, look at that. Look at that. You see, they was copying everything, even in Sweden. The people that brought me here, I don't get no help from them because they know me. I'm 50 years here. They paid for me to come over here. They put money in a hat to this Danish guy. It was a Danish guy in the Harlem Kitties. First, it was just the Harlem Kitties. Then I came, all of a sudden, it turned to King George and Harlem Kitties. And the old man, he died. The founder, his name is Garver Hansen. And his name came from Denmark. And it was a Danish man that wrote. And they saw me and Hendrix in New York. His daughter, he brought his daughter to one of our gigs in New York. We used to have these after-hour gigs in a place that we could rent. And we sell a bottle of wine and a joint for a dollar, and we play music. And we was trying to get to everybody's music, Motown, everything. And then Hendrix was there, and I was there, and two different bands. I came out, and I did my thing. He came out, and he did his thing. But he didn't sing. He didn't sing. So the girl told her daddy, take that one. He came to the dressing room and took my address, and I just thought, you know, we all playing high, so I thought that's all of it. Some weeks later, her daddy called. He said, hello, if I speak in the screen, it sounds like somebody from Georgia. And I said, what the hell you want me to hear?
Yeah.
And then he said, I want you to come over here and sing. And then I got careful because I had the nerve to think that the CIA was looking for me and a whole lot of other fellas. Yeah. So I didn't trust this fella. This fella sounded like CIA to me. He knew about my singing. He said, my daughter seen you, and I said, and he seen this Hendrix guy. And I said, well, why don't you get Hendrix? He's a better player than I am. And at the time, he was. And, well, the way I thought, anyway. He didn't, it's not the way he thought. He thought that I was ready to go out there. And I've just come from down south. So,
was it your singing ability that
the girl
him?
Said, well, he's good, but he don't sing.
Okay.
So they caught me because I could sing.
Okay.
He wasn't singing in New York.
Okay.
He was talking to me all about singing. And then I asked him, I said, you think Bob Dylan can sing? I didn't know about Blowing in the Wind with Sam Cooke. I know that Sam Cooke is down there. I didn't know about Bob Dylan. And he said, but he writing them songs, writing the songs for Aretha and Wisdom Pickett, whoever wanted to do them. And I said, well, anyway, if you think Bob Dylan can sing, I said, you can. I told him just like that. If you think that that man can sing, then you can.
Yeah.
And then he was teaching me all about the Dr. John, and I started to study on Dr. John and New Orleans singers that don't sing Tom Waits. You know, they got gravel in their voice.
Yeah.
You know, and I tried to sing like that a while, but I didn't sing like that, and I haven't, because I found out that I was something special. Each man has a different tone in his voice, and we cannot take that from another man. He got it. They tell me that I look like Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
Say my voice is like Morgan
Freeman.
Over here,
okay.
Everywhere I go, they tell me I'm like Morgan Freeman.
Yeah.
I had to take a look at it, some of his film, because I didn't know it before. They always come, even here, everywhere I go.
As you heard, that was part one of part three. So tune in next week and we'll have part two up. And continue with our conversation with King George Clemens and his little brother Alex, all the way from Gothenburg, Sweden. So we'll close out with a different version of the first song that we opened with of King George Discovery.
got this when I was a baby boy.
Oh, I think
when two people are in love, they speak better to each other if they say nothing at all. If I'm gonna be unhappy, oh, I can be that all by myself. I can be that without you, without you, yes, you and you. Help me. Ain't no substitute for the real thing. Long as I live, said I'm gonna sing. You can't stop me, not if you try. I'd rather lay down and da 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 da.
Once again, signing off.